extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. Matt Doyle, the armchair analyst, he's here. David Goss, here, not for long, but here for now. We've changed our schedule, folks. We're up very early, so forgive us for all... forgive us for everything, to be honest with you. But, Dave, you're off to the promised land, man.
Yeah, man.
Central, is it Central Ohio? Am I going to offend anybody when I say that?
Does I don't know. You know better than me. That's not my expertise, but it is Buckeyes country.
It's Ohio. I know that.
So you're going to Campione's Cup for Wednesday night.
Yeah.
All right. This is your first trip to the new Crew Stadium.
It is lower.com field. I am very excited for that. I love Columbus. Yeah. I've always had a good time in Columbus. It's a great city. I'm excited to go back. I told Doyle in our pre-meeting, it says on my resume, we'll travel for Campeones. And if there's two Campeones in one spot, I got to be there, baby. I got to
be there. Oh, man. There you go. Cruz Azul, all the C's in one place. ESPN2, Univision, TUDN, Wednesday night, one of 14 games on Wednesday night. So as we sit here and try to comb through what was an insanely packed weekend as it is, just remember, there are 14 more games coming on Wednesday night. So I hope you have ESPN Plus. If you don't, what have you been doing this entire time? You've been listening to this show. And I guess just like, you know, the whole like, are you watching the games or just looking at the stats? You're just listening to Extra Time if you don't
you
have
don't
ESPN
need to
Plus.
Watch the games because we put you in such a good place. Speaking of, can I just read you real quick a Mark Dos Santos quote from an article this weekend that says, quote, I left the Whitecaps at a very good place.
Exactly.
That's how I feel about this show. Whether I come back from Columbus or not, I've left this show in a very good place.
You know what? Before I went to Cabo, that's what I should have. I should have come back and said, look, I left Extra Time in a really good place. Zero worries. Knew they were just going to roll right along. Speaking of the Whitecaps, they're on the bubble. We'll talk about bubble watching this show. We'll talk about the Revs chase for history. It's looking pretty, I don't know. In your column, Doyle, you said that they're the Supporters Shield winners, but I just want to say in my preview column, I had also said that. So I was first to the Supporters Shield crowning.
You, Weavey. You also said the Fire would make the playoffs and that you would drink a bottle of Malort if they
What's that?
Cutting out.
Does he have to drink the full bottle in one sitting?
My internet connection is breaking up here. I don't know what. I have no idea what's being said or what's happening right now. Do I still have to drink that bottle? Probably. I probably should just out of solidarity with
you
the
You should
fire,
also have to get a poster in the back of your set that says Chicago, the jewel of the Midwest. No, the Paris of the Midwest.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Nickname is?
I have no idea.
Chicago, city of fountains. That's Kansas City, by the way. So, all right, let's get into it. We'll talk about the Sounders. Kansas City, it was a big, big moment for the Sounders. They were on short rest off League's Cup final, and they got the job done. They're in pole position in the Western Conference.
No, but we did the show last week, and you told me that Seattle couldn't win because they played players in League's Cup. And
I didn't say, did I say that?
Yeah, I think you did.
I'm like 99%. I don't remember what I say, I guess. also, Timbers dropped a touchdown on RSL. There's a lot to talk about. Let's get right into it. Let's start with a bunch of mail because I asked for it on Twitter. It worked really well. I'm just going to pepper it in throughout the show. It's going to help us set things up. Tom Riddall up in Minnesota says, how much better is the West than the East? And that's sort of a general topic to jump into before we start here. We always have this conversation every single year as it sort of like stratifies and you start to really understand who are the good teams and who are the bad teams. In the Eastern Conference, I'm starting to feel like maybe there's only 2.5 truly good teams, maybe 3 good teams. And I'm not sure if I would count New York City in there right now. Be New England and Nashville in the West. I'm trying to think on good teams. Seattle, Kansas City, Colorado sure seemed that way, but they've been dropping points left and right. I still count them there, and I'm maybe thinking about counting Portland. Depth-wise, though, Doyle, what's the better conference? If you had to go out and just say right now, East or West, who do you rate more?
I think it's a toss-up. Yeah. I genuinely think it's a coin flip. Like, obviously, New England and Seattle are great. I think that Nashville and Sporting KC are just about at the same level. I think Philadelphia is at that level, too. Like, don't get sort of distracted by their somewhat middling MLS regular season record. Like, they made the CCL semifinals. teams that usually that make the CCL semifinals, MLS teams that make the CCL semifinals usually tank in the league. Like 2020 LAFC, 2019, I'm blanking.
I mean, Toronto, obviously, after the
yeah, Toronto in 2018 after the run. You know, Dallas back in 2017. Like, all those teams face planted and, you know, ended up missing the play, or not missing the playoffs, but ended up, in LAFC's case, being substantially less than what they could have been during the regular season, and the rest of them missed the playoffs. Philadelphia is fine. Philadelphia came out of that kind of devastating and heartbreaking loss to Club America in the second leg, in which I thought they outplayed them, and but didn't have enough final third quality to get it done, and have collected, you know, 6 points from two playoff teams in the, you know, well, now knocked Atlanta back under the line, so they're no longer a playoff team, but 6 points from two pretty good teams in the playoff hunt in the Eastern Conference, and made it look relatively easy. So I think, you know, don't sleep on Philadelphia. On the flip side, yeah, the Timbers, I think, are a top three team in the West. No, I mean, no disrespect to Colorado, but if you look at that roster and the number of answers that Colorado has, compare it to the number of answers that the Timbers have, especially in attack.
Mainly in the playoffs, right? Like, you trust the Timbers, this Timbers group, more in a playoff game.
I think you need that high-end talent in the playoffs to sort of plow through it. And the Rapids are great. The Rapids have a bunch of guys who are like 7 out of 10s. And they're bringing it every single week. They have one of the best coaches in the league. They don't have any match winners. And so it's a recipe to be a really good regular season team. But I am skeptical about their ability to be an elite team in the playoffs. Whereas with Portland, we know they haven't been a great regular season team thus far, but like, they're getting hot at the right time. And are you going to want to, like, if you're a Sounders fan, do you want to see Portland in the playoffs? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
This kind of tees up the next question that we have. And I agree, it's mostly a toss-up. And that's because you have a couple teams at the top who we all respect and we watch and we say, okay, passes the eye test, pass the results test, pass the underlying numbers test. You're there. But then it's just sort of like free-for-all. Straight free-for-all. Like, basically, in the West, I would say free-for-all from about now, given Portland's form, you would say 5 all the way down to 10. Sorry, FC Dallas, Houston, and Austin. I'm not counting you as members of this free-for-all.
No soccer in Texas this year.
I don't think you're going to the playoffs in November. but all the way down to San Jose, who won this weekend and beat LAFC, who are on the bubble. I mean, it's literally 38 points to 33 points, and LA are in trouble, I think. We'll talk about them in a second. And in the East, it's really the same way. I don't know, maybe you could say from all the way from New York City down, given sort of the stratification at the top with New England and Nashville. So it is a toss-up. We're going to find out in the playoffs. A big, you know, look, a big theme of the season is that we're not getting a ton of cross-conference, you know, examples to choose and look at and analyze. You're seeing conference teams beat up on each other, so it's hard to compare the two. Here's another question before we really dig in, though. Ben from ATL, the most overrated playoff team is? Dave, who's your overrated playoff team right now?
I guess you'd have to say the LA Galaxy, because I think 2 weeks ago they would have been in the conversation you just had, and they've shown in the last 2 weeks that they're not a part of that. A large part of that is the back line's just not elite. When you talk about all these teams, almost everyone has a center back that you would trust with your life if you're going to make a playoff run.
Speaking of, Jite took Koulibaly's life.
Yeah,
that was.
And most, I would say, have a full back line of quality now. Viafania didn't play last night. I think when him, you know, when you have those two fullbacks, they're fairly strong compared to other groups in the league. But the Galaxy are the one that stand out right now that I would say I'm probably not going to pick them for a cup run, no matter who they stand up against.
3 wins in their last 14. I mean,
a lot of it's been without Chicharito and without Jonah is what we talked about.
And but if you look back at and if you look back at that performance last night, like, Chicharito's going to want that one back. He had 3 or 4 looks that, I mean, you would expect one of them to have gone in. And like, I thought he looked active. And if he's moving around like that and he's playing like that, they're going to find goals. And I don't think they're going to continue on what is really a terrible run. I think they will start to win some games, but they're not a contender.
Goals are not the problem, though. Yeah. I mean, well, they were last night.
Well, they were, but that's the problem is, okay, they give up two in Austin.
They have to win 3-2. They have to win 3-2. They're not going to be a team right now, as it's constructed, that prevents goal-scoring chances. In fact, they're a team that, like, they'll pick them, they'll pluck them from anywhere. Like, how could you give up a goal-scoring chance? We'll figure it out. We'll show you every example of how to do that. We, and 2021 LA Galaxy.
Yeah, and to be clear, David, Viafania did play last night.
He
ended up getting subbed off, but he was like, he was not effective at all. Yeah. Like he's starting to show his age a little bit. Cabral has not been an answer for them. Like he definitely has some tools and he finds good chances. He doesn't finish them, but I can't believe they spent $6 million on him. It's just wild amount of money for such an obvious project. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The Galaxy are right now, I think, the most overrated playoff team.
This feels to me like the Galaxy, and Dave, you're sort of the preeminent person on the show that bangs the drum of, like, give imports a year.
Yep.
The Galaxy went out and just brought in, like, a squad of imports. And not only did they do that, they didn't bring them all in, say, January, where they had months and months and months to sort of get acclimated and do preseason and have this time with Greg Vanney on a team, by the way, that's completely changing who they are from a soccer side. So to me, where the Galaxy were, my God, was it a fairy tale? Yes, it was a fairy tale. But usually fairy tales are fairy tales because usually it doesn't happen that way. And maybe this season's not the fairy tale. Maybe next season's when it all jumps off. I mean, I trust Greg Vanney, but right now it doesn't look like it's going to be 2021 for them.
I mean, just to be clear, they're still 5 points clear. Yep. Of the chasing.
Oh, yeah, they're in a good spot.
They're in a good spot to still make the playoffs. But if you make the
postseason, anything can happen.
It can, but they're just not.
Yeah, but look, the glass slipper's sitting on the stairs and nobody went to pick it up. There's no prince right now unless Chicharito just goes back to like
April. We're so far into the Cinderella thing. I don't even know where we're at.
All right, here we go. Look, MLSsoccer.com is your spot for all the coverage. Of course, Doyle has his Monday column up. Steve does his thing on Saturday nights. Charlie Bohm had a really good piece, I thought, talking to a bunch of the big time GMs and coaches in the league about Leagues Cup and where that's headed and what they're going to have to do to compete with Liga MX. I thought that was very good. That would help as well. Yeah, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see what Doyle's doing right now. And obviously all the nuts and bolts, schedule, standings, everything you need to know ahead of what is another big week in MLS. Where do we want to start from this weekend? You want to start with the Revs chase for history? You want to start with Sounders supporting Kansas City? We could start with Portland.
Let's start with the Revs. Let's give history time.
Okay. Well, here's your update on the Revs' bid to make MLS history. Of course, they're chasing the points record. They could also be chasing a double, etc. 2-1 win against Orlando. Their last 5-4 wins, one draw, two wins sandwiched around that draw. They're on 62 points right now. That is a lot of points. That is a full, I'm doing the math, 14 points more than Seattle. Now, they have played three more games than the Sounders, so there's room to catch up there, but I think we all can agree that they're going to be into the supporter shield here. 72 is LAFC's record in MLS. There are six games remaining for the Revs. Their max is still 80, because since we've talked about this last, they've gotten max points. They need 11 of 18 out of their last six to pass LAFC. So you're talking, I mean, you can get that a lot of different ways, obviously. Four wins, three wins, two draws, etc. But they got to keep getting results to make that history. Their pace, 2.21 points per game. LAFC's pace in that record-setting season, 2.11. So they're ahead. But with six games, there's no wiggle room. They're on track for, I think it's 74 points right now in their points per game, or like between 73 and 74. And their final schedule is at Montreal, at Toronto, New York City, at Orlando, Colorado, Miami to end the season. Mm-hmm. So there they are. But here's the theme from the weekend after a 2-1 win against Orlando. 16 of 19 wins this year have been by one goal. And we have Andy from Revs Nation saying, should the Revs be concerned about most of their wins being by a single goal? And before we give our opinion on this, certainly we should listen to Bruce Arena.
Have you seen many soccer games in your career? It's a record. Soccer is a low scoring sport, and often teams win by a goal. I don't know if you realize that. That's not anything tremendously unique in this sport.
It's just a record, though, by far.
Well, whatever, record. Yeah. We won 19 games. Why are we worrying about winning by one goal or not?
I don't want to nitpick Bruce, but tremendously unique.
Yes, Doyle, thank you, Weavy. Thank
you,
Weavy.
That would be something
yes.
that you would certainly bring up on the show. Out. Yeah, I mean, it immediately just jumped out to me. And reading it, it didn't, but in hearing it, I was like, okay, Bruce, come on. We can't do that, man. You know,
also,
you just got to go to unique.
For anyone not watching on YouTube and you're making a mistake, you should watch us on YouTube because then you get to see everything. The look on Bruce's face the whole time daggers. Is classic, like, you're an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, by the way, Anders, here's a note for you. Just mark it down right now. Have you seen many soccer games in your career? Probably going to need to go in an updated intro for 2022. Just going to throw that out there. I know we have Bruce in there already. I think he's talking about extra time in it, but I think we need that one in there. So are you worried, Doyle? Would you be worried? Do you care? Have you seen many soccer games in your career?
Not a lot. It doesn't make me think that the Revs are anything less than one of the two best teams in this league. I think the Sounders are right there with them when the Sounders are completely healthy, which, and unfortunately for them, they haven't been. So I guess I just talked myself into saying that the Revs are clearly the best team in the league.
And Revs fans right now be yelling at you saying that we didn't have Carly Seal for a good bit and we still maintained our pace.
Yeah,
that's what
I mean,
they'd be yelling about.
And that's fair, but I don't think anybody can. I don't think there's any rational way to argue that the Revs have dealt with fewer absences than the Sounders. Like the Sounders definitely have, but that's part of it, right? That's part of being the Supporters Shield winner is managing your absences, having answers, and they have done all of that. They're also not a dominant defensive team. A lot of those one goal wins, like the one against Chicago, man. Like that, like Chicago hung two on them, and it took a spectacular late play by Tajon Buchanan and Carlos Heel to turn that 2-2 draw into a 3-2 win. It took a spectacular late penalty save from Matt Turner to turn a 2-2 draw, or, you know, to preserve a 2-1 win, prevent it from becoming a 2-2 draw. They have the players that turn these games that are not necessarily dominant performances into wins. And I think that is what we're seeing with this 16 out of their 19 wins being by one goal. We've also seen this from Bruce before. His 2011 Galaxy team that won the double, they were almost 2 points per game. I think they ended up with 67 points over the course of the season. And won all four of their playoff games. 12 of their 19 wins were by one goal, and three of their four playoff wins were by one goal. So his teams have a history of doing this, and it's been shown time and time again in MLS. That's kind of stupid to bet against Bruce Arena, but it's calling it a worry isn't. That's not the right word for it, but I would be more comfortable if we were seeing a team with this much talent from back to front actually go out there and finish teams off, you know, 3-0 by the 60th minute and just put it in cruise control. And for whatever reason, the Revs might not have that gear.
So,
I don't know if it matters or not, though. I don't.
So this isn't pushback, but to add on to this, early on in the season, the team was still finding their feet. Since they've hit form, they have been so far ahead of everyone else that over the last, well, I guess if you add the Carlos Heel injury, over the last 2 months, they have not started their best team game in and game out. That I think is part of what we're seeing is like the last 2 weeks where they've been winning games or tying late, it's bringing Tajon off the bench. It's bringing Heel off the bench in Chicago. Those two goals, Andrew Farrell doesn't start that game. And he's obviously their minutes leader.
Finally.
And all that.
Oh, he's being lazy. Come on, Andrew. Yeah, I thought you were going to play every minute this year.
So I think this is clearly part of how the Revs play. But I think part of it we have to remember now is they won the Supporters Shield like 2 weeks ago to the point where Bruce is doing just enough to get wins for them to kind of keep them healthy until they get to the playoffs. And I think so. So early on in the season, this is different than what it is now. And so when you look at the record and the 16 of 19 and all of that, I think that's an element in it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Does it concern you at all?
Yeah, no. I mean, what flags me is I think those previous teams would have had opportunities in the playoffs to have two legs, basically, to have two bites at the apple. Whereas now there are not two legs. If you have a subpar defensive performance, and it's not going to be Chicago Fires that you're going up against in these playoffs, you might be out. I just want to throw it out there for people who might be wondering at this point, like historic teams, what was their goal differential? Because the Revs at 20 don't actually even have the best goal differential in the Eastern Conference. They're tied for the best, but they're not alone in that stat. Nashville are at 20 as well. LAFC in 2019, and look, this was like the most intoxicating attacking season of all time, scored 85 goals and had a plus 48 goal differential. Plus 48. I mean, that is crazy. And their defense is going to end up allowing fewer goals at 37 than the Revs, you would think, who are at 33 with six games left. Toronto FC were plus 37, also gave up 37 goals, fewer goals scored than LAFC. Red Bulls were 29 goal differential. So maybe the Red Bulls are more accurate, but all three of those teams are going to have better goals against defenses, just straight up stats, than the Revs will.
But the one thing, so you ask if you're worried. One is, going into a playoff run, a good team, the big question is, can they win in the postseason? Well, we saw it last year. We already know this Revs team can. So I think that takes away an element of, are you worried? Because they've proven, and you just named four teams, or three historic teams. LAFC had never won in the playoffs, and they didn't go to MLS Cup. Red Bulls had never won in the playoffs. They didn't go to MLS Cup. Toronto had won in the playoffs, and they went and won MLS Cup. So I think that track record is fair to follow in terms of trusting teams. The other is that LAFC team was a team that they had Carlos Vela, but outside of that, they were a team that created chances through their system, and they wanted the game to flow. That's really tough in the playoffs. This Revs team doesn't care. They've got match winners, like we talked about with Portland. They've got match winners through this team that can win a tough game, can create chances if a team sits in deep. Whatever it is, I think this Revs team has shown that they have multiple ways to win, and they can dominate at home. And so I still think they're clear favorites to get to MLS Cup.
We've kind of been theoretical here. Doyle, what did you see in this particular game against Orlando City? Because Orlando City, we have Roberto Maranzo hitting us up saying, should Orlando City be worried? This was sort of not the first, but some real promise in a performance despite the lack of the result for Orlando, who haven't been showing a ton of that promise recently.
Yeah, I mean, that's four straight losses for Orlando City. They're right in the like smack dab in the toughest part of their schedule, and they're not playing particularly well, but I think it is right for Orlando City fans to be worried given their recent form and the state of the Eastern Conference playoff race. But also, Nani has been rested. He has, like, Oscar Pereja has done a good job of trying to make sure that this guy's fresh for the stretch run. Daryl DK is back. He scored a goal against the Revs where he shot it through Matt Turner. both fullbacks are back, and while they don't look quite 100%, they look pretty close. And I mean, Mauricio Pereira is back. He doesn't look quite like himself, but like he's rounding into form, and I thought he was buzzing around and causing the Revs some problems. And then the big one to me is Jackson Mendes is back, David's favorite player. Like he makes such a difference in that central midfield. And now, granted, Orlando City were not as good this weekend as the Revs. They deserved to lose that game, but they also gave themselves a chance to win it. And maybe if they had somebody besides Nani to take the penalty
Nani and Frank O'Hara this weekend.
At least Frank O'Hara is traditionally great at penalties. Like, that's his whole thing.
Yeah, he scored his goals at Liga MX on
penalties. Nani has always been not great on penalties, and it's absurd that he took that one. But I am still of the belief that this team is going to make the playoffs, might even end up getting a home game out of it. The way it looks in terms of health and in terms of the sort of added drive out of central midfield that they had in this game because of Mendes, I think they're going to go on a run in October. And on top of that, like they have two more tough games left, and then the schedule gets much easier down the stretch. So if you're an Orlando City fan, yeah, obviously your team's lost four straight. You should be concerned, but I don't think you should be running around with your hair on fire just yet. You're still above the playoff line. You finally have your team pretty close to healthy, and the schedule's about to soften up. So don't
get existential.
Yeah, don't get existential or too abusive. I mean, we know you're an Orlando City fan, so you're going to be abusive on Twitter, but don't get too abusive.
Yeah, yeah. Know your limits. Know your limits. Before we let this go and keep rolling here, we had a nice tweet from By Napkin Art, which I had not read before this exact moment, who's asking how important Tommy Mack has proven to be toward New England's success this season, but also mentions Matt Polster, because he says Matt Polster is no longer the unspoken guy on the team. But I think this is maybe an opportunity to give Matt Polster some dap here, because Matt Polster has a potentially best 11. If Joao Paulo was not Joao Paulo, Matt Polster would be my best 11 defensive midfielder.
You remember what, you know, when you were saying about the article Charlie Bohm wrote about League's Cup and like what needs to happen? Like, what needs to happen is for a team like the Revs to have their current setup and also have the ability to go get another DP like Joao Paulo and put him next to Matt Polster. Like, that's a team that can, like, that would be a team that could win CONCACAF Champions League. Polster's been awesome. He, like, his ability, and Bruce Arena uses him in kind of that throwback D-mid role, who drops back and splits the center backs and allows both fullbacks to fly forward. It's how Toronto used to play under Greg Vanney up until about 2018. It's how Columbus always played under Greg Berhalter, with Will Trapp doing that. A number of other teams did it. It's kind of that pattern of play has sort of disappeared over the last 3 years. And, you know, Polster and the Revs are bringing it back. His ability to beat that first line of defense and eliminate two or three defenders constantly puts the Revs into these transition moments. And when guys like Heal and Buxa and Buchanan and Bo are in transition moments, they're lethal. And Polster's been the key to all of it. He's probably going to get a vote from me for best 11 this year. I'm going to put him and Joao Paulo in there. Two D mids, because no D mids ever make best 11. I'm putting two in there.
But then we got the Chris Armas Defensive Midfield of the Year award.
Yeah. You
know, people really, they lust after that.
That's it's just, neck and neck, man. Is it like those two guys?
I heard it's in contracts now. I heard that players are putting extra time.
I would hope so. I mean,
we should get that. We should get to that point. I think maybe
he's just looking for kickbacks. Let's be real. Oh, Lord. Just trying to create the scenario.
Yeah, you know, just grease these palms a little bit. You said Adam Buchs's name, and that reminded me of a question I asked Charlie Davies last night when we were recording Instant Replay. I just want to ask you guys it before we move on. Who do you think is more likely to be with this team? Three scenarios. Next year, New England Revolution. They have Bo and Buxa. They have just Bo. They have just Buxa. Which one of those scenarios do you
they
think
have,
is the
they
most
They have
likely?
Just Bo.
Just Bo. Yeah. I think they're going to make a good amount of money off of Buxa this winter.
You don't think there's more room? Like, Buxa, I don't think, has hit his ceiling in MLS.
No, but it's better to sell too soon than too late.
Fair. Also, you have Bo now, so why wouldn't you sell now when you have another guy who can play in that role than a year later, where you don't know what you're getting from Gustavo Bo, and then if you sell Buxa, you have to replace him immediately with someone who can give you minutes. Like, they have cover. They've started Kiza. They have Bunbury. They have Bo. Even if you don't add someone, which you will, because you're going to get all this money for Tejan and him, and you've already replaced Tejan in Tristison, who
I like. Kiza, by the way, I think he's going to end up being a good MLS forward.
Whoa, draft pick by Bruce Arena. Who would have thought? Oh,
shocking, what a curveball stuff there. All right, let's keep it rolling here. Normally we go straight to the Sounders. Let's just throw a change up here, Timbers, because I'm rocking your jersey today. We're going out west to you. You dropped a touchdown. Yes, six goals. Not seven, people. Understand the math here. On Real Salt Lake, and that was a tough one for Real Salt Lake. And it got a little bit testy on RSL Twitter, because they had been used to not being a bad defensive team, and they've given up a number of goals recently. We got Tim Sweeney asking us, Timbers were ruthless in their attack Saturday night. Are you a believer now? Is there anyone Seattle should fear more than their rivals? What did we see in this game from the Timbers? What did they prove?
Sorry to say nothing for me. And we talked about them last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. This is still a team that has some of the best top end talent in MLS. It's still a team that lacks balance. And so game states are really important in terms of who they play and how the game plays out. But as Doyle said, you don't want to play them in the playoffs. And I said, I think last week, they'll go as high as Sebastian Blanco can take them. So if he's healthy, if he's fit, then they are good enough to get to MLS Cup. If not, they're not good enough. And to beat up on RSL at home doesn't change that in my mind.
Yeah, the way they did it, being dominant on set pieces and ruthless on the counter.
It's the same way they're always good when they're
Yeah, it's the same. And like the difference between this version of the Timbers and the version of the Timbers that won MLS's back last year was that version of the Timbers was able to do that out of possession as well. You just use the ball to kind of pull you apart, even when you're in your low block. There was some of that against RSL, but RSL were such a mess in this game. I don't know. That said, the Timbers are 5-0-1 in the last six games, and it's not all because they're much better on set pieces than they were for the first two thirds of the year. Like they're being cleaner with the ball. They're being more direct and purposeful. This is a really good team, man. And I'm with David in that it didn't show me something new. It just sort of like reaffirmed what we all thought about the Timbers going into the year. And I think the most heartening thing over the past month since that, well, they had the loss to Seattle and then the loss to Austin back to back. Since then, their defense has just been so much better. And a lot of it has come down to, I think, a simplified role for Diego Chara. And then just doing a better job of getting pressure to the ball in central midfield. And on top of that, the fullbacks are taking fewer risks. Like those fullbacks were flammable for the first 20 games of the year. And they haven't really been for the past six or seven. Ends up asking less of the center backs. And I think that's a good thing. I think the center backs for Portland are not center backs you want to ask a ton of.
So the one thing I didn't say, which we should add, but I don't think it'll be a factor in 2021, is Nia Škoda.
Think it'll be a factor?
I don't think he's going to reach a peak level coming off an ACL over the course of the rest of this season, where we're going to say, to Doyle's point of, well, they can create a ton of chances out of possession against the low block because he's a difference maker on the ball as well as Blanco. Because that's been Portland's story for years, is Blanco's the only one who can really create chances in those moments. Then with the Obobese at center forward and the way Williamson was playing, that changed at MLS's back last year. Obobese is now gone. Williamson is hurt. Felipe Mora doesn't add to any of that, although people are going to try and make me crow on Felipe Mora.
JC on Twitter shaming Goss into recanting his irrational distaste for Felipe Mora was on the list here. So
I just want to say I blame Bobby Warshaw for just hating pure nines so long in my life that I just can't respect people who only operate within the 6-yard box. But he doesn't take them up a level. Nia Škoda could. I just don't think a guy coming off an ACL is going to be able to reach that level this year. But that doesn't mean
he need to reach that level, or does he just need to have 10 solid minutes off the bench every now and then? Because no, that's basically
If you want to say the Portland Timbers are going to go to MLS Cup and they go into matchups either at home or as favorites, teams are going to sit deep on them. And for them to break a team down, it has to be more than a guy coming off the bench for 10 minutes late in the game. It has to be the flow of the game over the course of 70 minutes.
We have Tim Sweeney, who had another great one here. Timbers take number 2. He was thrown around takes. Is there an award for most improved player or anything else to reward Dairon Asprilla for the season he's had? Low-key, the feel-good story of the year. This was a, you know, variety is the spice of life sort of thing for the Timbers. Felipe Mora, Dairon, Yimi, Diego, Nisgoda, Paredes. I mean, 6 different goal scorers at 6-1. Now, Salt Lake was absolutely shambolic. Like positionally, effort-wise at times, let's say, to shut down the ball. So you understand why they got there. But do we want to heap a little praise on Dairon? Is October, or no, no, November, what, October, late October, November Dairon, now all year Dairon, or?
7 goals, 2 assists.
It's pretty good.
He's been pretty good. He's had, like, I think if MLS did it the way that the NBA does it, where instead of just a best 11, there's like first team, second team, third team, Dairon would maybe have an argument for third team.
We're doing that.
I've been doing that in my year end column for 5 years, sweetie. So that's
your what?
No, just yeah, kidding. Exactly. but no, like Dairon's been really, really good. He still has all those tricks, and I enjoy those tricks. They have not been they have been the defining part of his game, I would say, up until this year. He has simplified a lot, and he's much more direct and much better about just getting into the box. And, he has a good amount of skill, and he has a good amount of physicality, and he's been using that better. The man has 14 career – in 7 years, he has 14 career goals. Seven of them have come this year. So it's like, it's just
the other half have all come in the playoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say, if this is regular season Dyron, what is like playoff Super Saiyan Dyron going to be? I mean, we've seen in the past. Does it level up even more? I don't know. We'll see. For RSL side, this was a debacle for them. We have a tweet here from Tanner said, did Pablo Mascherini just play himself out of an official RSL head coaching job? Who would you like to see in charge? Most of the reporting out there, a lot of it being done at The Athletic, Jeff Reuter's been doing it all over this one with Sam Stachel and others, has been that it's Landon, who we talked about with Charlie on this show, and then it's Pat Noonan also as a candidate. And I remain a little bit confused about hiring a head coach without owners, but maybe, I don't know. Someone has to confusing coach the team. To me. Yeah, for sure. But it's an awkward situation for everybody, I would think, both coach and club. But it may just be the way it goes. Who would you like to see in charge? Does Pablo have a chance?
No, it sounds.
I'll tell you. My gut says that Pablo does not have a chance.
Sounds like he's already.
And that if
out.
He did have a chance, it would be more. It would be talked about, but also if he had a chance, this team, their results would be better. But also, it's a yo-yo, man. This is like we talk. Like, remember that interview we did with Tony Beltran, and it remains the same. Like, I can't even imagine being inside the organization.
So here's the thing: they were a playoff team when Freddie left. Talked to Tony Beltran, everyone had them last in the Western Conference and said True. That the way they were set up, they couldn't win. And I think that's been disproven. I would like to see, if they're going to remain an interim coach for the year, that James and Olave gets the opportunity, because he's won with Real Monarchs. He understands the club. He's from the, he's lived in the area. All of those things, I would like to see him get that chance.
Would be awesome. This team. Let's say assistant coach for an incoming guy.
And then potentially, or he proves that he can have the job himself. Yep. It seems very odd to me that Landon Donovan would leave a team that he's literally built, not on the field, off the field as well, for this opportunity. But again, it is really hard to get a job. There are only a select amount. People don't leave them if they're successful. And so if you get the opportunity to be a head coach in MLS, for most people, you have to take it. So I can understand why they would take it. Personally, I want to see Luchi Gonzalez get the job, but he doesn't even seem to be in the running.
What do you think, Doyle? RSL's future?
It's so tough to figure out because of the ownership situation, the identity of the team, man. Like RSL 4 years ago were like at the forefront of the play your kids thing, and they don't really bring guys through the academy anymore. And they certainly, other than David Ochoa, like they haven't put any of the new academy kids onto the field at all. So they have to figure out if that's what they want to be going forward. They have to figure out what types of DPs they can get. It is tough to look at all that and the amount of flux and take a guess at who the coach will be. I'm just going to trust the reporting. If they say it's Pat Noonan and Landon Donovan, then I'm sure that's who it is. I tend to agree with David. It would be very cool to see James and Olave or maybe Javi Morales, one of those.
Javi's in Miami, by the way.
He's in Miami, dude.
Yeah.
Come on. You got to get him leave the beach for the mountains?
He knows how beautiful Park City is.
Fair.
It would be nice to see a connection to that great era of RSL soccer, but also it can't be nostalgia-based. Tony Beltran.
Spoilers, it's going to be Jason Kreis.
Yeah, right. So Tony Beltran and Elliot Fall have to make what they think is the right decision, and hopefully for them they get it right, and hopefully for RSL and the fans, whatever the decision is works so well that when the new ownership group comes in, their approach will be, oh man, this is going great. We're here to not mess it up.
Supercharge it. Invest in ways that makes it even better.
Exactly.
So we'll see what happens, man. That's going to be an ongoing conversation for RSL. But right now they are above the playoff line. Even when you lose 6-1, doesn't matter. They got a 3-point lead on LAFC, who are not
either
exactly guys, looking like they're beating down the doors.
Either you guys think they're going to stay there? Either you guys think RSL's making the playoffs?
So I just don't want to come off as an RSL hater. When, if Freddie was still there, I would say yes. With the trend under Pablo, it feels unlikely.
I think they have a higher they have higher points per game under Pablo than they did under Freddie.
There you go.
They beat the Sounders last week.
Yeah. But going into League's Cup, weird Sounders group. They lost. They gave up 6 goals. Daković looked like me out there.
Yeah,
it was rough.
The Timbers gave up 6 goals right before they went on this run.
But the Timbers have Blanco and Valeri and Chara to fall, Charas to fall back on. If they had 2 Charas, then I would pick them.
You know what? I don't believe in LAFC. I might believe a little bit in parts of the Vancouver Whitecaps. I'm just going to go. I'm just going to say, I'll see you in the playoffs, RSL.
Wow.
Come on, baby. We'll see you there, all right? We'll see you. Take us to the promised land. How about this? Let's go to Sounders, Sporting KC. We know both of them are going to be in the playoffs. This was, as I wrote before the weekend, sort of in a way, like who's going to win the West? It's not a guarantee by any means. A lot of games left. But this was pole position moment. This was to get into the position to sort of hold everybody else off. Figured the Sounders were going to have a tough time of it because Sporting KC, I think they had like 10 days off ahead of this game, whereas obviously the Sounders are going to Vegas and losing an emotional game. And also the Sounders hadn't won in Kansas City since, I think, 2013, which, hell, that might be a Mike Fucito game. It was so long ago. They were 0-4-2 in that time in Kansas City. And the Sounders come out, get a 2-0 lead, rolled on, Bruin, hold on, defend, walk away with the win. And I remember that there was a lot of news, and we probably talked about Kansas City whooping it up in Seattle after they won there earlier this year. I got to imagine Jingle Bells was bouncing through the hallways.
After we're done with this, we're going to talk about the fact that FC Cincinnati just fired Yopstown.
Oh, well, there it is.
Let's talk about Sounders Sporting KC. Go ahead, yep. Ruby.
Yeah, okay. What do you think of this Sounders win? What did they prove here? And I, like, before this, I sort of was like, I don't know if it's direct. I don't know if it's like there's a direct line here, but Peter Vermees said League's Cup wasn't for them, played a lesser team, lost, got whooped. And then since the time that Sporting Kansas City lost that game and Seattle won their own game to move on, their quarterfinal game, and then eventually got the League's Cup final, Seattle played one game less than Sporting Kansas City over that time. Seattle had 15 points in the league during that time to Kansas City's 12 and are now first in the Western Conference and are in position. And this is very important. It's not just, hey, did you finish atop the West? Do you have playoff home field advantage? That is quite important to get you to the MLS Cup, where if the Revs get through, they will host. But if the Revs don't get through, whoever finishes atop the West almost certainly will host this thing unless Nashville just start ripping it off. The other thing is there is a CONCACAF Champions League place at stake here. Supporters Shield gets it. Western Conference, let's just say it, gets it. And then the next team, because there's no Open Cup, would get it. So you're playing for CCL spots at this point as well. And Seattle put them in position to do all of that. So I'm not saying that, like, Peter Vermees' gambit blew up in his face, because his gambit wasn't necessarily for this particular game. It was for the rest of the season so they can hit the ground running come playoff times, because they've been disappointing in the playoffs of late. But it makes Brian Schmetzer and the Sounders look pretty good in their ability to balance all these things and still come out on top, not only head-to-head, but overall in just straight-up points, standings, etc.
They're the league standard in balancing all those things and coming ahead. And what they're doing this year, with, you know, by making the run to the final and then, frankly, outplaying Club Leon for 60 minutes before, you know, Ariel Halon made some adjustments that Schmetzer just couldn't quite match. But, like, making it all the way to the final, being at or near the top of the West all year long, and then coming out of that disappointment and going to the other best team in the West and getting a road win, it reaffirms everything that we've thought about the Sounders in terms of what they are as an organization, and what this team is in terms of individual players being really, really good and really, really up for it. And, you know, they didn't play great. I thought it was a really well-played game. It was one of those games that makes soccer both wonderful and maddening to try to analyze, because is a really played, well played game between two really good teams, and yet it was defined by two like inexplicable mistakes from the Sporting KC defense, and like it, specifically Graham Zusi, and what do you say? You know, it was wonderful to watch, and it had to be so frustrating to watch if you're a Sporting KC fan. I think those mistakes are uncharacteristic and not necessarily indicative of a larger problem. They just, it's the type of stuff that sometimes happens. And I like nothing that I saw made me think anything other than that these are the two best teams in the Western Conference. Though I am still, I am still iffier on Sporting because I just don't really trust their mid block or low block defense. I think that if they don't win the ball with that first line of pressure or the second, you know, the sort of the repress, they end up getting really, really vulnerable. There were a number of times where Seattle sort of had them and weren't able to finish the playoff. I thought Fontas and Ilya scrambled really well to try to prevent that. Whereas with the Sounders, I don't have that concern about them. They're so good defensively in those situations. You know, they do press, and if you beat their first line of press, they are the best team in the league at staying completely organized and then just backing into a low block. They send one or two guys to harry the ball and to try to, you know, slow down the transition while everybody else gets back, gets into their shape, and like once they're in their shape, they're almost impossible to break down. You guys are both reading about Yap Stam. I could see it on your faces if you're watching on YouTube.
Me? What? Huh? No? Yeah. So, what? Okay.
So, I don't know that we need to say anything more. These are the two best teams in Western.
Yeah, the only thing
we want to move on to Yap Stam or no?
Just real quick, the only thing I wanted to add is the defensive mistakes, actually, because they don't surprise me from KC. My issue was their inability to score that equalizing goal. I thought Russell was dangerous. I thought Kinda got into spots. And that's the part that to what we said with the Revs, they need to score to win. And that was a little bit surprising that they were not able to.
We know Alan Pulido.
Yeah, for sure. But if he's not there for the playoffs, then that's a question.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And they need Alan Pulido to be that level.
And I'm sure Peter Vermees would be sitting here saying, like, are we disappointed by this? Yes. But the whole thing about that Leagues Cup game and everything since then has been to somehow get Pulido doing Pulido things in the playoffs. Like, do we want to lose this game? No. Do we think we can win in Seattle? Yes. Are we going to be able to do those things and try to get the MLS Cup without Alan Pulido? Almost certainly not, I wouldn't say. Look, some news from Kansas City. Johnny Russell has a verbal agreement for 2 more years with Sporting. That's been a great signing for them. Cody Welton did ask us, what's going to hold KC back in the playoffs, and why is it PV's stubborn resistance to squad rotation and substitutions? One good note from this game for Kansas City on the injury front is Izzy Matt Marine came back in as a sub. So that's a good start, but they have the rest of you to try to figure this thing out. Another note, Josh Atencio is
he's real good,
man.
Yeah.
He's real good.
Yep.
It's fun to watch. All right. We had Rick Sports
feed. Elliot Tomes. His future was locked in forever. Yeah. Charlie you're Rickman? Savage like that.
This is just to sum it up here. Rick Sports Feed hit us up and said, KC and Colorado had their chance this weekend and fell short. Sounders continue to set the pace in the West. That basically sums it up for you. All right, Yap Stam. I haven't seen, I'm like scrolling through Twitter right now, Doyle. So, maybe you saw it first.
So Yap Stam relieved of his duties. It says, Soccer Talks says that.
It's incredible how teams have figured out how to be like, not say fired.
Yeah, for sure. Effective immediately. Soccer Talks says, U19 head coach Tyrone Marshall will take over team for now, which, speaking of RSL guys, he just left RSL for Cincinnati. So, yeah.
During our nearly 2-month process to identify the next general manager for FC Cincinnati, it was apparent that a head coach change was necessary. That's from the press release.
Jeff Birding has a quote here, quote, "We believe a change in leadership is in the best interest of the club at this time, and a new GM will lead the search for a new head coach. We're an ambitious club, and we remain focused on achieving our goals, the first of which is making Cincy a championship city." Playoff city is where we should.
So here's the thing. Remember we were talking about Pat Noonan and RSL? Reportedly, I've seen a number of places that the front runner for the Cincinnati GM job is
Albright.
Chris Albright, who's a technical director for the Philadelphia Union. Pat Noonan is head assistant coach for the Philadelphia Union. If you're Pat Noonan and you
100%, I know where you're going. 100%.
Don't you say thanks, no thanks to RSL?
1,000%, yes.
Yeah. I mean, Cincinnati have been a meme team since day one. They are probably going, not probably, they might win their third straight wooden spoon, which has never happened before. They also have one of the biggest budgets in the league. They have in Lucho Acosta. I doubted the Lucho Acosta signing.
Yeah, he's been good.
He's been so good. And not just like the fun Lucharoo stuff that we be memed about for months.
You see how much
it lives forever. Not only but like you could tell he's an emotional leader out there, and he's so much more professional in how he approaches every game. He doesn't, like it used to be, if he wasn't getting calls, he would get down and he would disappear from the game. He does not do that. He is out there trying for 90 minutes week after week to elevate this essentially USL team that Jared Niekamp and Jaap Stam surrounded him with into something respectable. And you have that. Brenner is not a $13 million striker, but he's been pretty good over the past 6-8 weeks, right? And it's very much a case of what David always says, which is give these guys a year.
It's David's thing now, baby.
I'm fine with it.
He's a man of patience. I like Barrial and Atanga, you know, and like, okay, you know, Matarita's pretty good. Beyond that, you have a lot of work to do. But if you're in Cincinnati, you are going to get, well, anyway, they gotta make the GM decision. They haven't hired Chris Albright, so they have to make this decision first.
I think they haven't, by the way?
Why is that?
I think the dream scenario is Bob Bradley double job. So you're waiting to see if he re-signs with LAFC, and if he doesn't, you bring in a guy who's won everywhere, well, except for in New York, in his MLS career. The only thing Bob Bradley can do leaving LAFC to elevate is to do the both GM coach double, right? Because everywhere else he goes, he can go and win MLS Cup, and that's great. And I'm not knocking that, and I think that's a great thing to do. But it's not going to elevate his status as a person in the U.S. soccer sphere, MLS, or the world game, unless he does something else. And we have seen Bruce Arena and Peter Vermees. The next step for them was to get both those jobs to be able to manage their own team. And if you're Cincinnati, who else gets the most out of players in MLS?
Yeah, well, and the other thing here is then if you have the GM and the coaching job, you can rise into that GM job and Michael can be your head coach.
Yeah, for sure. I guarantee you there's a trade.
I'm just
24 minutes after that.
That's not a realistic thing. Like, you crazy, in my opinion.
But I think for them, that is the ideal scenario the way this ends. And so if you're Cincinnati, you're waiting to see how that plays out in LA because you're not going to know probably until the season ends with them.
Can one state fit Bob Bradley and Caleb Porter?
Let's find out. Let's certainly find out. Jaap Stam, by the way, his time at FC Cincinnati, 8 wins in 47 games. It goes without saying that none of those are playoff games. 36 total points out of 141. This will be full-time manager number 4 for Cincinnati, which is to say nothing of Yohan Damé rolling in and out as interim.
Full-time interim.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, it's been bad. It's been pretty poor. It's been pretty poor for them. But you're right. You're right. Well, this is like, there are a lot of pieces of this that are pretty darn attractive.
Yeah.
The current results are not, but the training facility is beautiful.
You have a DP centerpiece, amazing. Man.
Yeah.
You have a DP centerpiece in his prime who is going out there and laying it down every single week. And like a lot of teams would kill for that.
Yeah. You have the support of ownership. You have fan base.
Go get a super draft goalkeeper and bring in like one MLS veteran center back and a guy in midfield who will run.
Just and go you're get probably Stephen Cleveland, pushing just go hit up the Sounders, get Stephen Cleveland. Like that's yeah. that's
or,
the way.
Or Spencer Ritchie.
Exactly. Spencer, so either well, Spencer, you know, he's on Instagram, man. He's remodeling a house. Like I think he's laying down roots in Seattle. I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah, we'll see. But that's big news and not unexpected.
And it also just it's the sixth coaching change in MLS this season. So it shows you where the pressure is. It shows you where expectations are. For staffs in this league, it also shows you why every name comes up with every interview because you got to take them when you can because you never know how long you'll be in them. It is, I think that's a huge change in this league, and it'll be interesting to see what direction they go in.
The only negative for Cincinnati is that the city is haunted. So that's a net negative for whoever incomes there. But if you can deal with that, you can certainly deal with the situation on the field.
Also, by the way, Cincinnati. Former FC Cincinnati assistant coach Paul Modica available, doing his thing, getting more wins for Pacific FC.
The Paul Modica train rolls on.
Should we just also state that a lot of things went wrong? And I think for Jaap Stam, the timing was pretty poor. Obviously, COVID, you can't work with your team the way you want to. But everything I've heard is that the locker room's completely disjointed, that he doesn't have relationships with players, that they don't feel like the training sessions make sense. Like all the negative things you hear coming out of a group when a coach gets fired have happened, and it's not related to the roster that's been built or the issues that have been above the coaching staff in the front office.
I mean, this is on repeat since they came into the league.
100%. Someday we'll tell the full story of their expansion draft experience, and it is a wild one. I don't think I have to tell it. You folks just go look at their expansion draft, and that'll tell you a lot about where this team went. So, oh boy, let's get to the bubble here because we only have a little time before Dave's got to roll on out.
Real quick, I'm rooting for Tyrone Marshall.
Oh yeah,
to turn this right around. Tyrone Marshall is one of the good guys in MLS, has been around for basically a quarter century in this league. And he has some top level assistant coach experience, and he was a really good player for a long time. So I hope that for his sake and for the sake of the Cincinnati fan base, which has lost its mind over the past 18 months or so, that they can at least make a respectable push down the stretch here and play some good soccer.
The resiliency of that fan base. You know, I felt it when the March
Bengals,
told me everything.
The Bengals trained them.
Everything.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They were ready for this. They were born for this, you might
Joey
say.
Joey Burrows, baby. Never mind. Continue.
All right. Let's hit the bubble watch here. Of course, the team's hovering around that playoff line, 7 in from each side. We talked about the Union. Actually, let's start with the positive ones. Crew winners against I'll just slow down and Club de Foot Montreal when just making sure I get that one right. We have T Beal 87 massive on Twitter with 2 stars. Have Columbus found their form, or is it too late?
I think Doyle wrote about this, but they're still not creating chances. So Zardes is better than all the other forwards on the team because Zardes is one of the best finishers in Major League Soccer.
And Miguel Berry disrespect.
I know, fine. Fine, I won't even say that. Whatever. They're better when Zardes is it. They're better when all of the players that have been injured are healthy. And so if they get players back, they're going to be better off. But they haven't fixed the issues they have, and they put themselves behind the eight ball because they played the most games in MLS. So they need other people to make mistakes for them to catch up and make the playoffs. And it feels like a mountain too high. But I'm heading to Columbus in 45 minutes. So Crew in the playoffs. Stay massive, baby. Crew fans, love you.
By the way, they have, we really need to get Anders' live chat of these shows into the actual YouTube show, because usually when we're laughing about nothing, it's from Anders just ripping in those chats. You have Campeones Cup on Wednesday, then you go to Philly, the Crew do on the weekend on Sunday. So it's going to be a balancing act for Caleb Porter. What's he chase? Does he chase that trophy and go all in there? Does he risk it? Does he
have to go
hold
back?
I feel like you have to at home too.
You're going
to
win something in your new stadium, and you're going to have 2 trophies in 2 years. As
I completely agree.
So the odds of you winning something otherwise are extremely low. Yeah. You may not even be in a position to do so.
And you could say at the end of the year, we had more injuries than we expected. We still like the roster. It's not like they're aging pieces. So you'd assume it's the same group coming back next year for the most part. Maybe changes at fullback, some things like that. They haven't had Archer for the entire season. So you'd assume if you're Columbus, you look at it and say, let's win a trophy. Let's put something that we can celebrate up there in the new stadium, and then let's move forward.
Yeah, you say we deserve more from this season at the end and move on. So, yeah, Sterling Nelson here. My shameless homer take, Tyler Miller should be in the conversation for goalkeeper of the year. That comes on the heels of a Minnesota United win over the weekend against the Houston Dynamo. They are hovering around that bubble as well, and I guess you should probably put some numbers to this. The Crew are 3 points out of the Eastern Conference playoffs on 34. Montreal are 37. That was a head-to-head matchup. That was a big loss for Montreal. They could have put some real distance between themselves and others. And then out in the West, Minnesota are now 4 points ahead of LAFC, who are in the eighth spot. They're sitting in sixth. They're only a point back of LA, and they're 3 points back of Portland, probably not going to catch the top three unless the Rapids keep sliding. What was this weekend for Minnesota, Doyle? How important was it? And how good has Tyler Miller been in your eyes?
I mean, he's been good. I don't think he's been – he's not really in the discussion for goalkeeper of the year, but he's been very good this year. And it, look, this is – Minnesota is a playoff team. They have been for the last 2 years. They've been above the line basically all year once they got that horrible four-game stretch at the start of the season out of their system. And now they have Emmanuel Reynoso, Robin Lud, Fragapane, and who knows, who's still not producing like you would hope for. But now they have those guys and, you know, available every week. And so you expect them to win games like this at a walk, which is what they did. And the question for them is, can they get healthy enough to maybe or stay healthy enough to maybe sneak into that top four and get a home game? And once they do, I mean, we saw how dangerous they were in last year's postseason. Now they don't have Kevin Molino this time, but I think they do have a deeper and better balanced attack once they're clicking. So this was just a taking care of business game.
Is Robin Lud the Finnish hot boy?
No, he's not. No,
I just wanted to say the phrase Finnish hot boy. I'm sorry.
I like that Doyle took that seriously.
Yeah,
I think it would be Finnish sauna boy, right? Because they're all into sauna culture. No.
Sauna boy.
Okay, yeah. I'm here for that. That might stick. You never know. It doesn't have the same ring as Lucharoo, but it is a.
I just can't wait for us to be at media marketing next year, whatever it is, preseason. We meet Robin Lud. Weeby tells him that, and Robin probably reacts like a Finnish person, which just is walks doesn't away. Thinks it's funny, doesn't really care.
Straight up walks away.
And just watch Weeby's heartbreak.
Okay, content series, sauna interviews. Make it happen. Post-COVID. Certainly post-COVID.
I swam post-COVID. In the Arctic Sea outside of a sauna in Helsinki. Shout out to my Finns.
There you go. DC United winners. We talked about FC Cincinnati. We've got to keep it rolling here, though. DC, good news for them. Areola with a couple goals against Cincinnati, and Steve Birnbaum is back. That is pretty huge for DC United. They are currently above the playoff line in the East on 37 points. Others around that playoff line, are the Red Bulls a bubble team? Do we count them as a bubble team? They had a nice New York Derby win.
The Red Bulls are a bubble team. They won't make the playoffs, but they are.
Are they a bubble team? They're 7 points out right now.
With a game in hand on most of the teams, right?
Well, I guess a game in hand on the teams right around the playoff line.
So they're a bubble team. I don't think
charitable playoffs, bubble. That's a charitable bubble at 1.2 points per game for the Red Bulls. Let's see who else is around this playoff line that we can dig in on real quick. Oh, hey, Vancouver Whitecaps are celebrating soccer moment of the weekend. Vancouver needing a win, desperate for a win, giving up a PK at the death to FC Dallas, and here comes Frank O'Hara to take it. And Maxime Crépeau says no, Dave, and then he's mobbed by his teammates.
Amazing.
Wonderful moment.
So he saves the penalty, and it's the 93rd whatever minute, and the save actually goes out for a throw-in, which is bizarre. You never really see that. And I think Ricuarte runs over to sort of try and take it quickly, and all 10 field players run to Maxime Crépeau and start hugging him, and they're like in their own goal until Maxime Crépeau is the one with the realization of like, go mark, go defend, we haven't won this game yet. But the reaction from the Vancouver players was so genuine that it felt like when you're at like a high school soccer game.
And it almost cost them though, because like 45 seconds later, they're still a mess. And Hara gets an open look from like 9 yards out in the middle of the box. And of course he's Franco Hara, so he kicks it into the 30th row. But like that was almost that was almost like elation followed by complete misery for Vancouver. Like they got let off the hook there with that one.
And if you go back and watch the play, by the way, the Southsiders are losing it. It's a pretty awesome moment, just, you know, in that stadium, obviously not having to have home games for a while and then come back. I said last week, this team's only going to make it if Cavallini starts scoring. He didn't, and hence they ground out a 1-0 win at home against FC Dallas. If you want to make the postseason, you have to be better than that, and they still need it from Cavallini. Like Brian White, as good as he's been for them, he's not going to be enough to just to get them over the line down this stretch.
Five goals. Don't say things like that about Brian White. Five wins, I should say, in their last seven. They are away to Houston on Wednesday. Then they take on San Jose. And then they have the Seattle Sounders away. And then they have Sporting Kansas City. So next four are going to be pretty defining moments for them. They need to win the next two to set themselves up for, I mean, let's be real, the two best teams in the West. Probably not going to get 6 points out of those games.
We had the Tyler Miller email. I just want to say, if Jimmy Bauer was healthy this year and every team deals with injuries, I think Dallas would be a playoff team.
I agree with that. The difference between him and the backup, Felipe, has been substantial. That said, the defense is nothing like what it was for basically most of the past decade. Matt Hedges being injured for part of the year and like not quite being himself as part of it. Justin Che, he's going to get sold for maybe tens of millions of dollars. He gets roasted every single week. Like, he's a high level prospect. He is not yet a high level player, and it showed in this one. Credit, by the way, to Vancouver for doing really, really good work the last couple of transfer windows. They were missing they went without 3/4 of their starting back line. They played without their first choice D mid, their first choice number 8, Kyle Alexandre, hasn't played in 6 weeks. He's hurt. Like, this was, I mean, it was a statement win. They obviously got a little bit lucky there at the end, but the Caps are better than I think most people, maybe even including Caps fans, realize.
Well, look, Mark Dos Santos set him up for this.
He did. So yeah. Like myself, I left them in a good place.
Hey, man, I understand it. He's out here. He's got to get another job. I respect it from Mark. You got to hustle it. All right, Dave, you're out of here. Go get your car, man. Go to Columbus. Of course, where's he headed? Campeones Cup going down on Wednesday.
Wednesday. So this is
like Columbus Cruz Azul, ESPN2, Univision 2DN at 8 p.m. Eastern.
And before I go, sorry, I jumped on the read. Unprofessional of me, but I think this is the second time I've seen Cruz Azul in person, maybe the third, and they are always fun to watch. They are one of those teams with no weak spots. You've got game breakers and Orbelin Pineda. I love Yoshi Otun still.
Yeah,
such a key part of my heart.
Dude, you got to say Rafa Baca. You got to say Rafa Baca.
And obviously,
Baca,
former San Jose legend Rafa Baca, who has proceeded to probably have the greatest overseas career for a former MLS player, and we never really talk about them. But they're awesome, and I think the matchup between them and the Crew is really fun. And I want to see Zellerion against the Liga MX team. You can see that little extra from him every time he plays, even in the All-Star game. And so I think there's going to be a little bit of juice to it, and I can't wait to see the stadium. Yeah. If you're in Columbus, hit me up. I'll be around. Really know what I'm doing.
Your one spot you got to go to? And you can't say Charbar.
I don't even know if Charbar's still open, man. The world has changed. It's really hard to say.
You know what? If it's not open, whatever is in there still smells like stale beer. Period. There's no probably. Doubt about it. That smell is just...
I'll break in and just drink a PBR by myself in the corner. Sorry, Heineken 0.0.
There you go. Yes. Thank you, sir.
There you go. Don't get too crazy out there. Companies Cup, of course, a bunch of other games on Wednesday night. Get out of here, Dave. Go catch your car. We'll keep this thing rolling. Safe travels to Dave as he heads to Columbus. Going to be fun. How are you going to watch 14 games on Wednesday night? Well, I have about 6 screens sitting in front of me right now. I'm going to do my darndest. Let's get to the playoff hopefuls who are on the bubble but did not help themselves out this week. Charlie and I joked about piling dirt on their graves. That might be a little much.
A little dark.
But then again, you were the Grim Reaper during the playoffs for the past couple seasons, so I think it's fair here. Yeah, Scooper 3 to FC Dallas, and they have a question mark in the offseason. Justin Che is not the only guy that might have big money going around him to a European team. Nathan Hill says, does Ricardo Pepi stick around another year, or is the young phenom gone?
I think it's most likely he's gone, right? There's been some reporting out there that multiple Champions League clubs from around Europe are ready to jump in and put together an offer. I think
the leagues that we had heard, what are EPL, Serie A, and Bundesliga?
Bundesliga, yeah, and so probably like, you know, probably La Liga as well.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah, and like the number is supposedly like a new record, higher than what Alphonso Davies went for, and it makes sense. Like Ricardo Pepi, if you look at the way he's progressed from age group play to USL to MLS to US national team, his age, his physical tools, but also his mental tools in terms of his, I mean, he moves in the box like Chris Wondolowski, man. Like he's always creating or finding space. He has a knack for making, you know, perfect contact with the ball. He's improved like an incredible amount with his head. He could not head the ball 18 months ago, and now he's scoring headers for both his club and his country. His hold up play has, like, he looks like a $20 million striker. That's a lot of money. It would be hard to pass that up. It's also, for all but a few teams in the world, it's the type of money that they spend on a starter. Not a guy who they're going to bury on the bench and hope that he develops in a year and a half. That said, 2022 is a World Cup year. I am a big fan of sure things. If Ricardo Pepi stays with FC Dallas for one more year, he's going to play 30 MLS games. He's going to play. He's going to be available for every international date. He is going to, you know, play probably League Cup or maybe League Cup game.
I don't think FC Dallas are going to be playing any League's Cup.
No, that's fair. 2022. 2023 is when it's
2023. Yes, but
fair enough.
2022. Yeah.
But I think we've seen with the Josh Sargent experience what can happen when a talented young forward just tries to get to the highest level possible as soon as possible without necessarily having put enough thought into what it could mean for his career development. Because from, you know, age 18 to 21, Sargent didn't develop at all. I'd argue he's actually a worse player now than he was as an 18-year-old because he got put into a situation with, you know, first Werder Bremen and now Norwich, where he's on relegation bound clubs, and they just need to get somebody out there on the wing or playing underneath in the half spaces. I don't think that would happen to Pepi, but I guarantee you that wouldn't happen to Pepi if he was playing for FC Dallas next year. Like, he is their starting center forward. He is going to play 2,500 minutes as a starting number nine, as a 19-year-old. Then he gets to go to the World Cup, and then maybe you're not talking about a $20 million sale. Maybe you're talking about 30 or 35. So I just think in the interest of, you know, a sure thing and making certain that our best young players are getting minutes at their best positions, I honestly hope that Ricardo Pepi doesn't leave this winter. I think it's very, very likely that he will. I think that the Hunts will probably get an offer that's, you know, too good to refuse. But I'm not sure. I'm not convinced that is going to be in the best interest of the player's development or the U.S. national team. And I admit very clearly that's the view that I'm taking here. And if you think that's wrong, just look at what's happened to Reggie Cannon and Brian Reynolds and Tanner Tessman over the past couple of months. None of those guys are playing. And like, those were all great offers. And I think in the long term, all those guys are going to be national team players. And they're going to be, I hope, very good players in big five leagues in Europe. But they're not right now. And right now matters a ton. Right now, over the next 12 months, matters more than any other time in the cycle. And I am willing to sacrifice a little bit of the top end that you could conceivably get if Pepe walks into Borussia Dortmund as Erling Haaland's replacement, I'm willing to sacrifice a little bit of that top end to make sure that the floor is really, really high. And that's what you get from 2,500 minutes in MLS. And I think that we saw it in his U.S. national team debut, and we've seen it over the years, not just with Jossie Zardes, but the three top scorers in U.S. national team history are Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey, and Jozy Altidore. All of them, their most productive years for the national team came when they were playing in MLS. So I just think, again, I think he's probably gone this winter. I think it'll probably work out because he is that level of a talent. As a U.S. national team fan, I am a little bit hesitant about that, and I would rather see him play it safe and say, you know what, let's win the Golden Boot in 2019, and then go to the World Cup, and then I'll have my pick of teams in winter of 2022-23.
401-206-0 MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. You might have some thoughts about that. The one thing I will say about Ricardo Pepi, if I was a European team looking at him, the soccer stuff is all very obvious, I think. But he is crazy young already, and his life experience is pretty incredible. If I was thinking out about a player who could come into my club, into a different country, into a different situation, and adapt quickly, I would think that Ricardo Pepi would have a great chance of doing so, given what he's already done. At 13 to leave his family and go to a different place and make it and grind through and figure it out on his own, certainly with support from FC Dallas and his family. But ultimately the onus is on the kid, on the person. That would be something that I would really value. And he just seems to have, in talking to him and watching him play, this sort of innate confidence of, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it happen. And that goes a long way. It's not just your ability to be good at soccer. It's your ability to be resilient and believe in yourself in moments that get tough, because they're going to get tough at times. We have some emails here about the Galaxy. What does the Galaxy need to hit that next level? Well, stop giving up chances everywhere and maybe get some goal scoring from your best players would be a good start for the Galaxy. I would say we kind of dove into them on the front half of the show. So given this is normally a Galaxy podcast, we'll keep it rolling. Aiden Hart, I asked for takes. This was his take. Bob Bradley should have been fired before Mark Dos Santos. That's a take. But there is a question mark about Bob going into next year. We shall see. LA lost 2-0 to San Jose. I don't know that they're dead, Doyle.
No, they're
playoff
not
wise. They're right there. They're 3 points back of RSL, and we know RSL are sort of in a chaotic situation. Playoffs or not for LAFC in your mind?
I still think they make it. And maybe that's a little bit crazy because they haven't, they've had two good little stretches this season, and then a lot of not so great stretches, but they have a bunch of 6-pointers coming up with these teams. I still think that they're better than the Quakes. I think that they're better than Vancouver. I think that they're better than RSL. The underlying, if you watch an LAFC game, you are seeing a team that creates chance after chance after chance, and until recently, nobody was finishing them. And now, granted, the last two games haven't been great, but one of those games was against the Timbers, and one was against a very desperate San Jose team. My money is still on LAFC getting across the line and into the playoffs, but when they're in the playoffs, I don't think they can do anything. That defense just isn't good enough.
All right, mailbag ending here. We've done a lot. This was a great way to do it. I'll do it every single show, I think, from now on. I'll just put it on Twitter. If you got something, reply in the thread. We'll also check the email and the text line, as always. Sachi Hot hit us up. You may recognize that name. How about substitutes entering the field of their signature song, like Mariano Rivera style? What would yours be in her Sandman? We won't do that right now because I think this is better with Dave and Kalen. That feels like the right squad to do it with. But if you have a thought on that, hit us up. And we'll finish with this from Chris. A lot of people asking this. How do you fix the Chicago Fire? This offseason will most likely have two DP slots open up and many others out of contract. Severe lack of leadership and accountability at this moment, says Chris. We talked about Bob Bradley in Cincinnati. We've talked about Bob Bradley in the Chicago Fire as well. There's an obvious connection. How do you fix the Fire, Doyle?
I'm still hung up on that the song I would enter to. I think it would have to be either Personal Jesus by Depeche Mode or Here Comes Your Man by Pixies.
Oh, that's there you go.
Yeah.
That's good. That's right? Good. I could be entertained by this. I am anti the strobe lights on celebrations, as all of Twitter now knows, and they're still yelling at me in the missions, but I am now pro. I'm very much pro signature song for substitutes. Yes. Now, if you have multiple substitutes, that starts to get hard, but that's where you need a good DJ to put the mix together, have the transitions right, etc. I don't know. Fixing the Chicago Fire, that's above our pay grade.
I mean, that roster is going to have a lot of off-season surgery. They have to do better with their DPs than they did last time. They have to do better at valuing their homegrowns than they did last time. Sure would be nice to have Georgi Mihailovic on this team. There are issues within that squad in terms of buy-in from everything that I've heard. It's not great for Chicago. I mean, it's going to be a full off-season teardown and rebuild. I'm not sure if that's going to include the coach in the front office, but that certainly is a possibility.
All right, that's it for us. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening. Remember, Compionis Cup on Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, Lower.com Field, Columbus Crew, Cruz Azul, ESPN2, Univision, 2 a.m., and there are 13 other MLS games that day. So I hope you have a double box situation ready to go so you can watch your club as well as the Compionis Cup final. MLS trying to get a trophy in that one, make up for League's Cup. That's it for us. Big thanks to Dave, you as well, Doyle, and producing Anders for entertaining me in the chat this entire show and making this thing run. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody.